Welcome back to Farm Talk. This is Farm Director Eric Johnson coming up on 10 past. As mentioned again, we're going to give a little educational opportunity for the folks voting in, voting for a lot of things, but one of the races that is up this year is the North Dakota Governor's Chair. We'll be voting next Tuesday, unless you're doing one of the early voting, which I plan to do either today or tomorrow here in Fargo. Early voting might be different hours or different days for you, but make sure you get out and vote. But I thought, what a great opportunity, since I know both Merrill and Kelly, both great guys, and I appreciate it. And the one thing I can tell you, both guys are men of their words, so if they tell you something, they mean it. So, Kelly Armstrong, North Dakota current congressman, how are you doing today, sir?
You know, I'm doing pretty well, sitting out here in western North Dakota. I haven't had to be back in D.C. for about a month, so that's nice, but getting ready for the election next Tuesday.
It is. Is it fast and furious, or is it kind of a little bit more relaxed right now? Do you do like a lot of last-minute campaigning, or how does that work in the final days?
Yeah, we do. I mean, we do a lot. I mean, we're doing a lot of things and all of that. And we'll be up in Grand Forks for the Get Out the Vote event on Monday night. And so we've ran a lot of campaigns over the course of the years, and the week before actually gets a little less fast and furious, because if that's when you're waiting to do everything, you probably haven't done it right.
Right.
So
right.
We've been doing this since January, and, you know, now kind of our last commercial's on TV. We're going out meeting, talking to people and doing all of that stuff, but there's no big campaign decisions to make anymore.
No, and I'll try to ask you a lot of the same things I talked to Marilyn. The biggest thing is I just wanted folks to kind of get a grasp, because when you have a debate, you get on some of the other stations, you don't always get a chance to talk about agriculture, or even though agriculture is a big part of North Dakota, don't get me wrong, with livestock and different things that affect rural North Dakota. So more or less just straightforward. And first of all, let's just talk a little bit about just your background in agriculture, because you do have a background in agriculture, and just give us a minute or two on that.
Yeah, I grew up in Dickinson, North Dakota. My dad owned a ranch north of Medora, so we didn't run cattle. We rented to a guy who ran cattle, but you got to spend a lot of time understanding that kind of stuff. And now we farm 6 miles south of Richardton, mostly wheat. And again, the same thing. We have really good relationships with our neighbors and turn them over and rent our land out to them. But, you know, we understand. I mean, when I worked for my dad, my job was to run all the non-oil and gas stuff. So I did a lot of the leasing and talking to the landowners, figuring out what you get hayed and all of that. So I spent a lot of time on farm and ranch over the course of my life.
Okay. Switching gears, running for governor when you've had a successful run as a congressman. Why the change? What made you want to be something more that's localized to North Dakota? Although you'll still be traveling, I'm quite sure, as a governor.
Yeah, I thought I had the best job in politics, being the only voice for the state of North Dakota in D.C. Turns out it's probably the second best job in politics, and the best one opened up. And, you know, I've learned one thing in 6 years out in D.C., and this is no offense to Julie or Senator Hoeven or Senator Kramer. We got a lot of good people out there. But if we wait for D.C. to solve the challenges North Dakota has, we're going to wait a long time.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to get back and work with my former colleagues in the legislature. And, you know, the one thing I always loved about North Dakota is the granular ability to touch legislation and the amount of people that are just trying to get something done instead of being D.C. Twitter famous.
Right. Well, the one thing, or there's a lot of things that I know about you that I like, but one thing that, like when you had autism and from your congressional role, you were back in North Dakota and you weren't hiding. You were definitely out doing the speaking tour and talking to different folks. Do you see that changing if you win the governor's chair? Are you going to still have time to do those roundtable discussions?
Eric, I've worked very hard my entire adult life to have jobs that don't require me to sit in an office all day, and that is most definitely not going to change.
Okay.
I don't know how you do this. I don't know how everybody has their own style to do it. I can't do this job well if I'm not out. And if I could spend 95% of my time in governor on gravel roads, I'd be the happiest guy alive.
So I'm assuming you also got a ton of feedback as soon as you announced that you'd be running for governor. What kind of feedback are you getting from folks out there? And if you could, maybe more specifically, rural North Dakota or agriculture side. What I'm sure there's people like suggesting and maybe having you look at things.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things outside of policy that has just changed is the economies of scale in farming has changed so much in the last 30 years. You know, equipment's bigger, roads need to be built up better. We have different ways to do value added, all of those things. And how we move this stuff forward and what it looks like, I think, is really important. You know, townships, I mean, roads, water, I mean, we obviously, when you're running for governor and you're in Congress and you have a fire, you start talking about FEMA and state declared disasters and all of those issues that come with that. But also at the same time, there's really ways in which you can do things at the state level and worry about what the feds are going to do with any kind of disaster package later. So,
right.
And I think just generally North Dakota, for as much as we've grown, we still have a lot of small rural communities that are, right, you know, struggling to get by and trying to figure out ways in which we can, you know, help stimulate those economies as well is really important to me.
Well, this is a hard question because I don't know how much the governor can do, but obviously commodity prices are not anywhere near where we would want them to be. And I guess besides maybe trying to figure out new business or new trade corridors for our agriculture side, are there some things as you being possibly the governor that you can do to help stimulate what's going on with commodity prices? I know it's tough because the prices aren't just based on North Dakota.
No, I don't think there's, I mean, I think I'd be lying to your listeners if I said the governor of North Dakota can move the price of wheat. But what we can do is create more, you know, like Spirit Wood. You're taking Red River Valley soybeans, you're crushing them in Spirit Wood, you're turning them into renewable diesel in Dickinson. You know, finding more access for the feedstock and ethanol. You know, the Red Trail Energy Plant, 85% of the feedstock is deployed out locally compared to like Castleton, which is where a lot of it ends up in Canada. So I think creating those things where you can get basis and transportation costs to a minimum and give everybody more opportunities locally to, you know, sell it a little higher, pay a little less in transportation. And that's a way you can help at least try and offset some of those commodity prices.
I know that, and I believe both you and Merrill agree on Measure 4, that you're not in favor of it, correct, about property taxes, changing the property tax code? Is that a blanket?
Yeah, I just don't know how, I mean, over the long haul, what that looks like. I think there's a larger, bigger conversation that we need to have about the legacy fund and about what this is and what it can do for future generations of North Dakotans, and taking the principle out of that to pay for property tax, to pay the $3.2 billion hole that this bill would put in the budget is really terrible. But I think this is the one that I think people, that scares me, that I don't think has been talked about enough, is you create a real, I mean, we have really cool recreational activities in North Dakota. If you're an outdoorsman, pheasant hunting, duck hunting, goose hunting, deer hunting, all of those different things that North Dakota is so good at. And it's a really good place to invest in land if you don't have to pay taxes. And I don't want my guys in Mercer County or McLean County having to compete with a duck hunter from New York who wants to bid on 17 quarters of land that come up for sale. And it could really change the landscape. That happens now anyway. And I think there are going to be a lot of people looking to stick money in North Dakota land if they don't have to pay any taxes to do it.
Yeah. And that brings up another question. I actually learned a lot as I was driving around for the Fall Harvest Tour. I got a chance to listen to some of the Western North Dakota radio, which is different than some of the Eastern North Dakota radio that I listen to. And I think a part of this, and I guess I haven't delved into it that much, but I think one of the suggestions was we can help our tax situation in the state if we do a redo and we go through the list of what's exempt in the state. Is that a reality? Is there something to that?
Yeah. I think anytime you pass an exemption, you dilute the tax base, and you want to broaden the tax base, because then the broader your tax base, the less everybody pays. And then also everybody has skin in the game. But I don't think you're going to get a lot of people to say that we should reduce the homestead tax credit for people over 65 years old. This is one of the places that there's real frustration, people on fixed incomes. But some of those are local, and I don't want to take away local control. I know people get grouchy about Renaissance zones, but there's a lot of downtowns in North Dakota that have utilized that and have had significant growth in their downtown areas because of it. But there are, yeah, I mean, I think the answer to this is always grow your tax base and make sure everybody has, make sure everybody's participating in it is better than picking winners and losers.
Right. Kelly, last time I had talked to you, you actually had some plans for possibly helping with the tax situation. Is that a part of what you were just saying, or is there a bigger outline picture that you may have in mind?
Oh, I mean, first of all, I don't write legislation, so we got to get the legislature, and there's a lot of people that are talking about a lot of different things, but I think just another buy-down scenario is a really silly idea. We've tried it. The state actually pays 40% of the local share of property tax all over the, on average across the state. I think we actually need to have serious conversations about reform and what that looks like and making sure we can, whatever the state buys down doesn't just get backfilled immediately. And there's been talk about 60 mils on primary residents, upping the primary resident tax credit they did last time from 500 to 1,000. All of those are good ideas. Actually, if you, this, like, they're different if you're in the county versus the city, but the actual overall cost is pretty similar. I'm more interested in how we deal with making sure that we actually lower people's tax property taxes. A buy down doesn't mean a lower tax, and that's one of the things I think as the legislature we're going to have some tough conversation about whether caps are a part of that. I actually think they should be, and then that we do a, I mean that, and that whatever we do is durable and sustainable. If you have $40 oil and $5 soybeans,
right. And there's something to what you just said. I know that I've been a proponent of cheaper taxes because I pay a lot in property taxes, and I know that was one of the arguments. It's like, well, if the state legislature, you know, does any kind of rebate, other entities seem to try and take that money away. Well, that's exactly what happened. We got that $500 rebate. My house immediately got reassessed, and guess where that $500 is going? Not in my pocket. So that's exactly.
I mean, another way to look at it, which is a little complicated, right? Though, if 100 mils is worth $1 million, and then 4 years later, 94 mils is worth $1 million, they still go to 100 mils. I mean, and that system in and of itself is complicated, which frustrates people. But there are ways, and I think if the state is paying for over 50% of the local shares of tax or property tax, the state has a say in what existing property tax budgets look like.
Yeah, Kelly, if you don't mind, we'll take like a 2 minute break. You okay with that? Maybe get a soda or something, and I'll come right back.
Absolutely.
All right, we'll be back with more Farm Talk coming up in just a moment.